Good morning. It is 8:01 a.m. on March 2nd, and I'm calling this meeting of Community and Regional Affairs to order. With us today, we have my co-chair, Representative Fansler, Representative Harriet Drummond, Representative George Rauscher, and seated in a few moments, Representative Dan Sadler. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Our staff today are Lori Rowland, Kyle Schrem, and Dana Owen, my committee staff. I would ask all of you to please silence your cell phones. And we have three items before us today. House Bill 47, Municipal Purse Contributions, Interest, HB 4, Military Facility Zones, and House Joint Resolution 10, Limit on Declaration of National Monuments. We'll first take up House Bill 47. My intention is to move this bill today. It has a further referral to finance. We heard testimony at our last meetings, and I have no amendments. Do we have further committee discussion? If we have no amendments or further discussion, I will entertain a motion to move this bill.
I'll go with the discussion first.
Okay. If that's okay. Yeah, we do have some discussion, Representative Fansler.
Thank you, Chair Parrish. In the discussion item for HB 47, I did have a question through the chair for my colleague, Representative Sadler. I know that last time he had said that perhaps this was a little bit too narrowly tailored for his liking, and he was going to think about possibly an amendment. Representative Sadler, have you worked with the bill sponsor or anything on an amendment, or have you since taken a different position?
Through the chair, Representative Fansler, I have not yet had the opportunity to do so.
Okay.
I did not know we're going to move it out this meeting, so sorry to miss that chance. I'll work with them afterwards.
Okay.
We've been joined by Representative Westlake. Good morning. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move we send House Bill 47, LS0281A, from committee with attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Are there any objections?
Just a comment, Mr. Chairman, if I
might. Yes. Representative Drummond.
Just a comment. I believe that this is the third time that I've heard this bill as a member of Community and Regional Affairs since 2013. I'm surprised it hasn't passed before now. I trust this committee will send it out. I believe it's a fair bill to deal with an issue that could not have been foreseen by these communities. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Drummond. Representative Rauscher.
Just for clarity and refreshing my mind, there was nothing added beyond 2010. Is that correct? We're just staying between 2000 and 2010. I know there was discussion in that area.
That's correct. The bill remains very tightly focused.
All right. Thank you.
If there are no objections, then the bill will pass from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations. We will take a brief at ease for members to sign the bill. Next before us, we have House Bill 4, sponsored by Representative Thompson. It's my intention to take testimony today and withhold action until a future meeting. This bill has had a hearing in the House Military Veteran Affairs Committee, and we have a CS from them. Members should note that CRA is the only other committee of referral for this bill. I will, without further demur, invite Representative Thompson to present on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, committee, for hearing House Bill 4 today. I'm Steve Thompson. I'm from House District 2 up in Fairbanks. House Bill 4 is a result of what happened several years ago. In 2012, House Bill 316 was created, which created military facility zones, which are areas around a municipality or city that are in close proximity to a military facility. What the military facility zones do is enable enhancement of the military's mission or lighten the amount of expenses that it costs for the military to do their jobs, and it encourages the military to stay in those areas. What this bill does is if somebody wants to build something or do something that will enhance that mission for the military, it allows them in a military facility zone to be eligible for low interest loans or for tax credits. And this was the purpose of the bill. There's a lot of interest been shown around the state for military facility zones, going clear down to Ketchikan, looking at building a new dock for the naval range that they have down there. The Navy needs a new dock. The Coast Guard in Kodiak needs new housing. J-Bear, there's a lot of activity going on there that this could be utilized on. With the addition of the F-35s up in Fairbanks and the Army at Fort Wainwright, there's a lot of activity there that could enhance their mission. If a company wants to build something that would enhance that mission, this would make them eligible for that. It was pointed out to us this summer that we do have a problem with it, though. The way that you become a military facility zone is you have to apply to the Adjutant General in the state, and he has to approve it. But there are certain steps that have to be in place. One is that the plan has to comply with the comprehensive plan of the municipality. Comprehensive plans, a lot of places, they aren't up to date. They only redo them about every 10 years. And to change a comprehensive plan could take up to a year or more. If somebody has something that they want to build or something that will enhance this military mission, it might not comply with the old comprehensive plan, and to change it would be cumbersome. So what this bill is intended to do is change the verbiage in the statutes by adding three words. It says comprehensive plan at the present time, but add or local ordinance. And this would allow this to happen in a more expeditious manner as far as trying to get that. There has been two other changes to the bill since we introduced it on the floor. One was to make it the immediate effective date, and the other one was a request by the military that we have added into this that it holds the Adjutant General and their decision to make it to give permission. Holds them harmless, basically. So those are the only two changes that have been made, besides adding the three words. And thank you. I have my staff with me to answer any technical questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions for committee for the bill sponsor? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Thompson, just an important question, I think. Does a decision on zoning, as this bill envisions allowing military facility zones to be conditioned on, does a decision on zoning have any more or less impact or effect or authority than a decision in a comprehensive plan from a local municipal government's standpoint?
Comprehensive plans, like I said, sometimes, through the chair, sometimes take a long period of time to change one. The zoning would have to go through the borough assembly, city assembly, or whatever you have there in that community. And there's a long process to do that, which takes more than one meeting. They have to introduce it. It has to be published. It has to be brought forward so that the community knows what's going on. And when you make that zoning change, there's usually public hearings and things like that. So it's a process, but it can be done in a month or so instead of a year or longer.
And followed. And just to be clear, so zoning is no less clear an expression of the local government's and the people's will than a comprehensive plan change. Is that correct?
That's correct, through the chair, Representative Sadler.
Thanks. Representative Westlake.
Yes, and thank you. This looks pretty good, and I know what you mean about the comp plans, or it's 5 years update on those things. Now, I'm looking at the bill itself. excuse me, on section one over there and line seven, as we're looking at page one, and it's consistent with the comprehensive plan of the municipality or local zoning ordinances. It's kind of like municipality or local. I mean, where I come from, Cotsby, it belongs to the municipality. That is, and could this be misinterpreted like, well, we're the local zoning authority, we can do this, or do you see any issues with that, with something like that? And a follow-up.
Through the chair, Representative Westlake, I don't see any issue there. The verbiage local zoning ordinance is a common expression to use in a municipality or a borough. They have their local zoning ordinances that take care of property uses inside of their designated area.
And did you have a follow-up for
Yes, I do. And that is, as I work at, as you know, we've still got the military base up there in Kotzebue. So we've got a city municipal, we've got a city local planning commission and a borough one, and I don't know how it works on other places. I'm sure they've integrated. So I was wondering if, for me, it would be ambiguous, but for everyone else, I think it would be fine. I'm just pointing that out because I do have two local ones in the same community.
Wow.
And so if I had looked at this, and if it were, you know, for me, if I had something like line seven, consistent with the comprehensive plan of the municipal local zoning ordinances or something at the local level, I think for me, it would make it much easier. And I'm just saying that. It's just a comment. So thank you.
Representative Sadler, would you or your staff like thank to you. Address his concerns?
I'm sorry. I meant Representative Thompson. I got my wires crossed.
Through the chair, Representative Westlake, I wasn't aware that there was any communities in the state that had both a city zoning and a borough zoning. Most places, I think the state lets it where that the borough is the one that has the zoning authority. So I wasn't aware of that.
Representative Rauscher. Did you have a question?
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, I think we vetted this pretty heavily, the committee, before this. We went over a lot of the aspects of comprehensive plans, how they interact with Matsu, with the different boroughs, with different municipalities. We went over a lot of the zoning and how it interacts with this, and I think we came up with an idea that this kind of dovetails right together. It doesn't overstep. It doesn't supersede. It works with, and it doesn't bring in something that's not allowed into it, a specified zoning type. So I just want to speak that we did cover most of that area. I've been on comprehensive planning boards before, and I know the long, lengthy process that he's talking about, and it could take anywhere from 2 to 3 years. So I do speak in support of this bill.
All right. Thank you, Representative Rauscher. I have Representative Drummond, then Representative Sadler. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. The borough doesn't need to be mentioned here because it's covered by local zoning ordinances.
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, yes. Whoever the authority is in that particular area around a military facility zone, I think the federal explanation of federal facility zones is, I think we spelled it to be within close proximity, but I believe the federal government says it could be within 100 miles of a military facility. So that might be that, but it would have to be an organized municipality that applied for this. So I would think if they wanted something done down at Delta, I don't know if they have the authority because they're not an organized city, so I don't know for sure if that would work.
So in other words, in the language on line 7, it doesn't need to say consistent with the comprehensive plan of the municipality comma, borough or local zoning ordinances? Because it sounds like Representative Westlake has a comprehensive plan in the North Slope Borough as well as in the city of Barrow. And I was involved as a member of the Anchorage Municipal Assembly with the 2020 plan, which is their comprehensive plan, which took, sorry, longer than anybody else is here. It took about 10 years to get to 2020. the decade was half over before it was completed by the municipality of Anchorage. So I totally get it. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Sadler.
Well, I feel compelled to note for the record I have not done a comprehensive board for planning board. Just be the outlier here. I just want to clarify one little thing through the chair, Representative Thompson. So this bill would not require a new zoning ordinance in any community. It just is sufficient to say that an existing zoning ordinance would allow for creation of a military facility zone. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, if a municipality or city wanted to change the land use for an area where that they want to have something built that will enhance the military, if somebody has some plan, they would have to change their zoning for that community, for that area probably, but they can change it with a zoning ordinance to where that would be permitted to be built in that area. Right. So it would have that effect.
Representative Sadler, or if an existing zoning ordinance allowed for the Planning and Zoning Board, for example, to make that decision without a new ordinance, that would be sufficient.
Okay. Through the chair, yes, Representative Sadler.
Okay. And the only thing, I'll belabor the obvious for a second. There's nothing in this amendment to this bill or this bill that prevents a community that does have a new comprehensive plan or an active comprehensive plan or on a regular updating cycle from including a military facility zone as part of that comprehensive plan. So this just broadens the applicability of a military facility zone.
Through the chair, yes, Representative Sadler.
And follow up, is my comment. Obviously, I was a sponsor of the original bill, creating these zones. I'm a co-sponsor of this bill. I think it's a great idea, and I'm pleased that you found a way to make this beneficial mechanism available to more communities on a more expeditious basis.
Are there any further questions for the bill's sponsor? Seeing none, thank you, Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee.
We'll now accept public testimony. I see that we have three people online. Oh, I'm sorry. We have actually four people online, one of whom is Brian Duffy, the Administrative Service Director for DMVA, who is available for questions. Otherwise, we'll begin with Deputy Commissioner Dole. Commissioner Dole, are you there?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Deputy Commissioner Bob Dole, the State of Alaska Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. Our department supports this bill as meeting the intent of the original 2012 legislation to allow military facility zones in Alaska. We believe this provides the necessary flexibility to local jurisdictions to go forward. And we think it's very important to maximize the competitiveness of our bases nationwide to allow these military facility zones where appropriate for a local jurisdiction and the nearby military base. I'm ready for any questions, Mr. Chair.
Do we have any questions for Deputy Commissioner Dole? Representative Sadler.
Thank you. I want to make sure and take advantage of Mr. Dole being there. Bob, do you know of any, through the chair, Mr. Dole, are you familiar with how military facility zones are being used in any other state or municipality around the country? What's the general industry buzz on MFCs?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, right now they are being used where we have found them most often, I'll be preparing a briefing on this for next week. I'm in Fairbanks, but our industries that support the nearby base, such as to enable an area to develop infrastructure, either for logistics, such as a supply side issue, or local manufacture of a component that's necessary for a base. We're going to be presenting next week up in Fairbanks on this issue, and I hope to have a more comprehensive just outlook of how they're used. But just anecdotally talking to other people that are the equivalent position to mine, right now it's usually near a base, and it's it's filling a need for the base. It's usually on the supply or logistical side.
Representative Sadler, follow up.
Thank you. And certainly the sponsor and most of the discussions about MVSEs have tended to focus on the interior of Ketchikan. I'll be parochial for a second, Commissioner Dole. You operate out of J-Bear. Can you tell me if there's any possibility of MVSEs being used in the J-Bear proximity within the 50 or 100 miles that this envisions?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, without prejudging an MFC application from either Anchorage or along the valley jurisdictions, I think there's ample opportunity to look at options that make our bases more competitive. The bases in Alaska are challenged by the high cost of logistics for moving stuff here, high housing prices, high energy costs. All of those, I think there are probably potential projects that may be able to reduce that cost, where Alaskan businesses can thrive from some federal money coming in and in the process lower the operating cost from the base for the base and compared to bringing the goods or services in from outside.
One more. Pardon me a moment. I've been asked to remind members and testifiers to clarify acronyms for the benefit of the record and public. Thank you.
Thank you. Then a follow-up. J-Bear represents Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. And I guess those familiar with the history of J-Bear and the joint basing concept understand that it was, in some degree, an effort to make sure that Alaska maintained a military presence in the face of pressure to reduce the basing costs. So I'll draw one more line between two dots. Assistant Deputy Commissioner Dole, as the military seeks to reduce its footprint and its costs for basing in the continental United States, would military facility zones help J-Bear become more competitive and thus more able to resist closure or contraction under any BRAC process?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, in the event of a base realignment and closure process introduced by Congress again, a military facility zones can considerably enhance the competitiveness of keeping Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson and the other bases open. And as long as we're sitting where we are today with the military saying they have 22% excess capacity, it's important that we maximize the competitiveness of our bases.
Roger that. Thank you.
Representative Rauscher.
My question was answered. I appreciate that.
Excellent. Are there any further questions for Deputy Commissioner Dole? Seeing none, thank you. And we'll move on to the next person. We have Fairbanks North Star Borough's mayor on the line. Mayor Stepp, are you there?
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the promotion. I am a staff to Fairbanks North Star Borough mayor.
Apologies.
That's okay. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, thank you for hearing House Bill 4 this morning, and thank you to the bill sponsor, Representative Thompson, for his continued leadership to ensure that military facility zones are a viable mechanism to generate economic development in military communities around our entire state.
Pardon me a moment, Mr. Stepp. Would you please introduce yourself for the record?
Yes. Jeff Stepp, Special Assistant to Fairbanks North Star Borough Mayor Carl Castle.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I simply want to echo and affirm Representative Thompson's remarks and also Deputy Commissioner Dole's testimony and express Mayor Castle's support for this legislation. The Fairbanks North Star Borough's Director of Community Planning, Christine Nelson, is here to address issues specific to the comprehensive plans and local zoning ordinance. She's our authority on this subject and our not-so-secret weapon. Again, thank you to the committee and the bill sponsor, and appreciate your support for this bill.
Representative Rauscher.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Representative Parrish. Through the chair, just one quick question. Just so we had some discussion earlier about municipalities, and I think the dictionary definition of it is they need to be incorporated to be a municipality. Our boroughs, just for the record, are boroughs incorporated?
Mr. Stepp?
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, I'm not 100% sure about the status of all the boroughs with respect to whether or not they're incorporated.
Would Director Christine Nelson be a better person to field the question?
Yes, sir. This is Christine Nelson. I'm the Community Planning Director for the Fairbanks North Star Borough. I can't tell you about the status of every borough, but the interpretation of municipality of the original bill did include our borough and the other I don't know if they're technically incorporated, but designated boroughs. So if there's an unincorporated city that is not in a borough, this may not apply to them, but if it is in a recognized borough, it would.
Representative Rusher?
Then I guess my follow-up question would be, would this be all right for the designer of the bill if she said she's not sure that this would account for those areas? Would you rather have some language that would tighten that up in case there are areas outside of a municipality that would? And I guess that will also ask Bob on the phone there whether he would like it tightened up for other areas or whether it's not important to him also.
We'll give that question next to Deputy Commissioner Dole. Are you still there, Bob?
For the record, Deputy Commissioner Bob Dole of DMVA. Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, we believe the language as it stands is adequate for the purposes going forward. We believe that the local jurisdiction or jurisdictions will sort out any jurisdictional issues before they get to us. But we think with the different organizations, just where we look at governance across Alaska, we don't see a conflict that would require amending the language of this bill.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I have a question for Christine Nelson. Is she still available?
Oh, it should be. She hasn't had a chance to give her testimony yet.
Oh, all right. Maybe we should hear her testimony, and then I'll ask her question.
No, it should be fine. Ms. Nelson, are you prepared to give your testimony?
Yes, sir. Through the chair. Again, I'm Christine Nelson, Community Planning Director for the Fairbanks North Star Borough. I want to give a brief example of why this bill is so necessary. In 2014, the Fairbanks North Star Borough planned to apply for a military facility zone to establish an unmanned vehicle technical and research park. The site was near Eielson Air Force Base and was intended to be a partnership cooperative agreement between the University of Alaska Fairbanks, the borough, and possibly the Department of Defense. Although the existing general use zoning would have allowed such a park, the comprehensive plan designation was agricultural and open space and did not support that specific use and would have required an extensive, costly process to amend the comprehensive plan. While our comprehensive plan had been updated in 2006, the actual map with the land use designation was from 1990s. And so that project basically died in progress because of the necessity for that change. The comprehensive plan is a general broad-based categories of land use, and often on those maps are very broad brush strokes. They are not parcel specific, whereas zoning is parcel specific and much more tailored to exact needs of the land area in those locations. By allowing consistency with either the local zoning ordinance or the comprehensive plan, it gives the community more flexibility to determine compliance, gives greater opportunities to establish a military facility zone, thus supporting the military mission and bringing jobs and economic development both to the community and the state in general. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nelson. Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Ms. Nelson, for your testimony this morning. So in the bill, on line 7 on page 1, where the bill sponsor has inserted or local zoning ordinances, would it Is the Fairbanks North Star Borough covered under the word municipality, or should the word or borough be inserted in that line?
It has been interpreted by our attorneys, and I'm assuming the state attorneys, that municipality does cover the borough. We, like I said, we were planning on applying under this, the previous version of this bill. So yes, I do believe it does apply, and in thinking about this language, if a city isn't incorporated or isn't in a recognized borough, they wouldn't have a comprehensive plan or a local zoning ordinance. So this would be comprehensive to those communities that have those tools in which to plan land use.
Okay, thank you. And then in, might I continue,
Follow
Mr.
Up.
Chairman? Thank you. And so in the Fairbanks North Star Borough, you have, I believe, two military bases?
Yes,
and
that's correct.
Are they considered part of the borough, and as such, do they have, do you have a zoning appellation for them, or is this what, is this where you would apply the military facility zone designation in the course of fleshing out your comprehensive plan?
Through the chair, yes, they are within the boundaries of the borough. We do not regulate land use on the base, but we regulate land use all around the bases. Fort Wainwright is actually partially in the city of Fairbanks as well. So we are the local planning authority for the entire borough, including the two incorporated cities, and we do have local a local zoning ordinance as well as a comprehensive plan that covers all around those bases, and the military facility zones would be located somewhere near either of those bases should we choose to apply in the future.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any further questions for Ms. Nilsen or Mr. Stepp? Seeing none, and seeing no one else waiting to testify, we will close public testimony now. Oh, right. Is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify? Seeing none, public testimony is now closed. Having closed testimony, and actually we've had a few questions arise which the bill's sponsor might wish to respond to. Are there any members of committee who would like to ask a question of the bill's sponsor before we set the bill aside for today? Seeing none, we'll defer action until a future meeting and set this bill aside for now. The next item of business is House Joint Resolution 10, sponsored by Representative Rauscher. Representative Rauscher, are you prepared to present your resolution? Representative Rauscher, you may begin when ready.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. Thank you for thank you for this committee for hearing this bill. I would like to start off that HJR 10 requests the Alaska Legislature to support the passage of UN Senate Bill 33, sponsored by Senator Lisa Murkowski and Senator Dan Sullivan. Senate Bill 33 will amend the Antiquities Act of 1906, which allows the President by proclamation to establish a national monument. SB 33, the Improved National Monument Designation Process Act, would require congressional approval for proposed monuments, approval from the state legislature where the monument is located, and compliance with the National Environmental Policy Act, NEPA. The United States Constitution divides the United States government into three separate distinct branches, the executive, the legislative, and the judicial branches. The concept of the separate branches with distinct powers is known as the separation of powers. So, under the Antiquities Act, the president has been granted the ability without Congress or the state's government involvement, without these checks and balances, and can create national monuments, and has done so in past history over and over and over again, no matter what administration you go back to. But the national monument designations deserve public input from the people and the communities who are directly impacted. For one, it comes from a legislative process at the national state levels. Passage of Senate Bill 33 will ensure participation by the American public, by Congress, and by local governments. I encourage you to join me, Senator Lisa Murkowski and Senator Dan Sullivan, in supporting H.J.R. 10.
Thank you. Are there
any questions?
Sure. Representative Sadler, I see you have a question. I always have a question. Mr. Chair, Representative Rauscher, appreciate you bringing this forward. I think it's a very worthwhile resolution. Just curious, did you, in your preparation of this bill, come across any evidence that either the previous federal administration or previous administrations to that had actually considered the smallest area compatible standard? My personal opinion is that I've seen a rather broad interpretation of the authority of the Antiquities Act to place restrictions on the use of land. I'm just curious to find out, was there ever any acknowledgement given of the smallest possible land area standard?
I refer you to Daryl. I believe Daryl might have that answer. I particularly myself don't have the exact answer.
Thank you. Through the chair, I'm Daryl Bree, staff representative George Rauscher. To Representative Sadler's question, there has been no determination of what technically the smallest area is. Recently, the most recent administration added 440,000 square miles to a monument on the Atoll Islands and things northwest of the Hawaii Islands. Mm-hmm. So is that the smallest possible area? Mm-hmm. There hasn't been defined what that actually is to preserve and declare these monuments what they are. So
thank you. Are there any further questions for the bill's sponsor? Representative Sadler.
I'll follow up just through the chair. Representative Rauscher, I understand this is in support of a Senate bill that our congressional delegation is bringing forward. Have you any information about the reception that this proposed legislation at the federal level is receiving from other states, particularly in the western United States?
Yes, there is, and I'll refer you again to Daryl, my staffer. He has that information probably, I hope, in with him.
Through the chair, I do. I direct the members. It should be in your packet. It's a press release from Senator Murkowski's office. It lists the 27 senators have signed on to co-sponsor the bill, and they're listed in there being from Kentucky, Wyoming, Montana, West Virginia, Louisiana, Mississippi, Idaho, Texas, Montana again, Arizona, Utah, Iowa, Nevada, Wisconsin, Kansas, South Dakota, Florida, Alabama, North Carolina, I think I said Mississippi already. So it's got endorsements from legislators and fellow senators from around the country, not just in the western part of the United States.
Very good. And a follow-up.
Actually, it's not really a follow-up question as much as a statement. And looking through the background information, I'm noticing on page 5 of 6 of that press release that the Obama administration has designated 555 million acres, or five times the size of California, as onshore and offshore national monuments, well in excess of twice the entire acreage so designated by all the previous presidents, back to Teddy Roosevelt, who ever had access to this. It's a stunning chart in its graphic. So obviously I'm going to support this.
Sure. Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Rauscher, does the Senate Bill 33 of the U.S. Senate require that every state provide a resolution in support?
I'm going to first say no, it doesn't require that, but I'm going to refer you to Daryl for a little bit more concise information on that.
It does not the bill itself does not require a resolution, excuse me, through the chair. The bill itself does not require a resolution of support for the legislation. What the bill calls for is when the president proclaims an area as a monument, he needs, before it can take effect, it needs congressional approval, and it needs approval from the state that's affected. So if it's declaring a monument in Alaska, he would need a letter from the governor saying that the Alaska legislature has considered this and it approves this monument being created. If the monument is being created in the marine area as a national marine monument, it would need a legislative approval from the states within 100 miles of the marine area. Say, for instance, he was declaring something off the West Coast that was close to both Washington and Oregon. He would need a legislative approval from both those states if it was in the proximity of those two. Under the Senate bill, that's House is moving forward.
Does that answer your question?
So, in other words, this resolution, Representative Rauscher's resolution, is not required by the U.S. Senate.
This through the chair, Representative Grumman, this resolution is not required. This resolution is basically a letter of support for the actions and the sponsors and the bill being brought forward by Senator Murkowski and Senator Sullivan.
And how many other states are providing similar resolutions?
Through the chair, at this time, I'm not aware of any other states providing similar resolutions. Haven't investigated. I will look into it and get back to you, if I may.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Drummond. Representative Sadler.
Thank you. A comment to clarify the intent of the resolution. Yeah, this is not an ex post facto or pre facto approval of whatever designation comes up. This is simply expressing our support for future legislatures getting the chance to have their say on future designations. This is simply, but importantly, expressing our support for that important change in federal law.
Through the chair, that is correct, Representative Sadler.
Yes. Are there any further questions for the bill's sponsor? I have one. It seems that under Senate Bill 33, the not only will one need a resolution from the state legislature to endorse, in effect, any proposed change, one will also need the cooperation of the governor of each state concerned to transmit the letter. Otherwise, it might get lost along the way or not get gotten around to. In your estimation, is that a bug or a feature of the Senate Bill 33 as it stands?
Through the chair, it's basically I guess if you could look at it as a bug. I think most governors, I don't know, they'd have a problem saying the legislature voted to approve this. is all that's required of the governor to put forward, but it could be a bug that exists in the federal legislation that's being proposed.
Thank you, Mr. Bruce. Are there any further questions for the bill's sponsor? Seeing none, thank you very much, George. Representative Rauscher, Mr. Bruce.
Thank you very much, Co-Chair Parrish.
I should note that we have Deputy Commissioner Ed Fogles on the phone, available for any questions. Are there any questions from the committee for Deputy Commissioner Fogles? Yeah. Representative Rauscher. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fancer. Parrish. I guess since we have Deputy Commissioner Fogle on the line, I'll ask you, Deputy Commissioner Fogle, what has been the impact of the designations of national monuments in Alaska over the history of our state on the ability of the state of Alaska to manage lands and the people of Alaska to enjoy the use thereof?
Representative Sadler, through the chair, this is Deputy Commissioner Ed Fogles, the Department of Natural Resources. To date, To my knowledge, there are four national monuments that have been created in Alaska: Admiralty Island, Aniakchak, Cape Krusenstern, and Misty Fjords. These were all created by President Jimmy Carter by proclamation during his term. You know, these are all, you know, once it's been designated as a national monument, it has a extra layer of protection, and so, you know, uses are further limited in those areas. I think that's probably all the information that I have that I could give the committee at this time.
Representative Fetzler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, I'm confused. You said that we have four in Alaska, and I'm looking at a list that clearly shows we have 11. Can you reconcile that, please?
Well, I'm speaking of strictly national monuments. That,
okay.
So, you know, I think the Antiquities Act enables the creation of several different flavors of designations. We have our state archaeologist, Judy Bittner, online, too, so she may be able to give you more details on the specific designations that the Antiquities Act can give. But also, I'd just like to add that this administration does support HJR 10, and fundamentally our position is that the designation of any additional national monuments in Alaska is counter to the No More Clauses of the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, and therefore should ultimately be authorized by the U.S. Congress with the input of the state of Alaska.
Any follow-up?
I see that Mr. Breeze would like to respond to your question as well.
Certainly.
Mr. Breeze.
Thank you. Through the chair, to Representative Fansler, currently there are four national monuments in Alaska, the four named by Ed Fogles. The list that's provided in the packet are the national monuments that were declared under the Antiquities Act by the President. Eventually, the majority of those on the list became national parks through legislation that was passed by Congress at a later date. After they were established as a monument, the Congress made them a national park. So several of the monuments, especially on the list from President Carter, eventually became national parks. So that's why there's only four listed in Alaska right now. The others that were monuments are now national parks.
Through the chair, follow up, if I may. So what is the process to become a national park then?
Through the chair, my understanding of the process to become a national park is passage of legislation through Congress, and you know, declaration and designating of the area, and then passage of legislation through Congress and approval by the President to become a national park.
So, follow up, wouldn't this resolution then, clearly we've defined what a national monument is as something different from a national park. Now you're diluting what a national monument is through this resolution by making it follow the exact same path that a national park would follow.
Through the chair, my response would be I don't believe you are. What you're doing is you're extending the public process and limiting the powers that the President has. When the Antiquities Act was passed, I think it was an important act to pass at the time because in Western states, a lot of native and tribal sites were being raided by, you know, the less than noble folks who were for looking to make a quick buck stealing some of the artifacts and things of that nature. That was the reason and the logic behind the creation of the Antiquities Act, so the President could act swiftly and declare these as national monuments and sites to protect them and preserve them. That was 111 years ago. We've improved. Western states has been settled. There's regulations and things in place that protect a lot of native lands and things like that. And the likelihood of basically grave robbers, if you will, mm-hmm. raiding the native sites is not as prevalent as it used to be. There's still, you know, some archaeological, you know, people take advantage of archaeological finds. It still happens, but the need for it as a national declaration is not as not the same as it was before, and the process that can be followed through Congress can address is a better public process involving more than just the president going, I think my backyard should be a national monument. It happened in Wyoming. Franklin Delano Roosevelt was offered some land by John D. Rockefeller back in the 40s. Congress denied making it part of Grand Teton National Park, so he declared it a national monument. Following the Jackson Hole area declared a national monument. Following that, in the next two years, Congress debated and passed a law requiring any future national monuments in Wyoming to be approved by Congress. In Anoka, Congress added the quote-unquote no more clause for the state of Alaska, requiring congressional approval for any future national monuments to be approved by Congress. This bill in Congress now basically extends that to the rest of the states, and adds the layer of the state being able to say, yeah, this is good and this should be preserved. We're not speaking in favor or opposed to any specific monument or creating a monument, just a fair public process and having the checks and balances that this country was founded on.
Follow up. So I think you very eloquently spoke to the idea of preventing grave robbing, I think was what was used. I mean, we've progressed since then, but it still happens. And why this was a mechanism to prevent that, is there a better way to tailor this so that we still have the speed rather than having to work itself through a Congress, a state, the president's office, especially in the high likelihood that we have a unified Congress and president right now, but typically we do not. I fear that we would have a great problem with grave robbing then if we did need to move with speed.
That would be a question to take up with Congress, or they can address how to better address the law. We're basically putting forward a resolution saying the Alaska legislature supports the proposal and the Senate bill. So,
follow up, if I could make Congress do what I wanted it to do, we wouldn't have had the last 38 years of my life, but they don't listen to me. So
I agree.
Next on the list, we have Representative Westlake, then Sadler, then Rauscher.
Thank you, and through the chair, Deputy Commissioner Fogel, so thank you for being here. As you know, House District 40, we are monumental. and I'm looking at the economic exclusion zone. I mean, that whole thing is pointed right at us on the Marine when the previous administration had done this. Now, as I look at this bill, it isn't going to undo anything. And I'm looking at the same concerns that Representative Fansler had. Are we concerned that a future president could come in and there's lands out there here in Alaska that they could do this to, that's going to stifle development? Is that the concern?
Representative Westlake, through the chair. Fundamentally, I think the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act set aside a huge swath of Alaska for conservation, and the deal was cut that should be it. And so for a future president, currently a future president can come in and designate additional monuments in Alaska by proclamation without the blessing of Congress. And, that could prevent development on additional federal lands in the future in Alaska someday.
Thank you, sir.
All right. So next up we have Representative Sadler, then Rauscher. I'm sorry. Yes, Sadler, then Rauscher, then Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To address your co-chair's concerns, I think that we've seen recently and will continue to see that a state legislature and chief executive can quickly and easily pass important legislation when there's a consensus on the need for it. I think one of the differences between the early part of the last century when this Antiquities Act was passed, and today is that we now have the National Park Service, and we now have resources like the state archaeologist. We have tremendous amounts of resources and personnel dedicated to the task of identifying, inventorying, and advocating for protection of antiquities. So the proximate need for immediate action by a chief executive, the president, to take action has been obviated by the ability for us now to identify these antiquities. I think it's given the evidence we had before us that it's clear the federal authorities are, to some degree, in my opinion, overreaching their ability. And I think having the consensus and assent and review by the states who are going to be affected is entirely appropriate. You know, the question of federal designation of land and assertion of protections is a much broader issue than simply National Antiquities and Monuments Act. If the authorities and the federal government can set aside they can go through the formal process of creating national parks and national forests. We've seen the national, the Alaska National Interest Lands Claims, or ANILCA, excuse me. And we've seen also that there's the creation of what I will call quasi-legitimate areas of ecological concern, marine areas of climate concern. There can be assertions that an area needs to be considered for evaluation for wilderness, which can create decades of de facto wilderness management. I think this one particular resolution and the Senate bill and the U.S. Senate it seeks to support is an appropriate and narrow limitation of a runaway power that's been, to my opinion, abused by the federal administration.
Quickly, and for the record, ANILCA does stand for Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act.
Right, right.
Representative Rauscher.
Yes, thank you, Chair Parrish. I believe that understanding that the senators would like to understand the support through around the country from the states through resolutions is probably an important factor when you see states starting to come on board, so to speak, using that terminology, with the idea that they need to either support the idea and in their state. Obviously, we have run across the need for such such type of legislation before because we have the No More Act. So we've realized that we've come to a point where we've realized that something like this has had to happen, and I think maybe other states have not yet because they have not run into it. So basically, I think what the senators are trying to do is give the same extension of realization for these states to be able to control their own, what they would like to actually see happen within their states, and I believe that's the purpose behind it. So just to answer where I think the previous questioning was going.
Thank you, Representative Rauscher. I have Representative Drummond and Representative Fansler. Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure what this committee is doing right now. It sounds like we're debating the bill when we have several experts on the phone. I'd like to hear from the state's Historic Preservation Officer, Judy Bittner, who I understand is on the phone, regarding the her history in the state and her perspective on the need for this resolution and this action by the U.S. Senate.
Ms. Bittner, are you online?
Yes, I am online.
Please proceed.
Representative Drummond, through the chair, I can tell you that the within the state there, with the Antiquities Act, there are about 50 historic landmarks that have been designated under the authorities of that act, which dates back to 1906. If in terms of the policy or position, I would refer about the bill and the proposal at the U.S. Senate, I would defer to Ed Fogles.
Ms. Bittner, would you please put your name and affiliation on the record?
Okay, my name is Judy Bittner, and I am the chief of the Office of History and Archaeology and the State Historic Preservation Officer. and that is within the Division of Parks and Outdoor Recreation, Department of Natural Resources.
Thank you. Deputy Commissioner Fogles.
Yes, Chair Parrish, Representative Drummond, through the chair. I think I've already stated that the this administration is in support of HJR 10. Again, you know, ANILCA has several no more clauses, and we feel that the presidential designation of additional monuments is counter to that, and should ultimately be blessed by Congress with the state's input.
Representative Drummond, your earlier point was well taken. We are still in public testimony, so I'll ask members of the committee to limit their remarks to questions of the questions of the experts we have online, questions of the bill's sponsor, and of the staff, Daryl Brees. So, Representative Fensler.
My comment was strictly to get us back to questions on the public hearing.
Oh, yeah. Excellent. Well, I see that we have no one actually online to testify, so I'll ask, is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify on this bill? Seeing none, I will close public testimony. Public testimony is now closed. And we will hold House Joint Resolution 10 over until a later date for action. Is there any unfinished business before the committee? Seeing none. Representative Rauscher.
I appreciate the committee for hearing that bill. Thank you.
Of course. Seeing no one further business, no further unfinished business, the time is 9:05 a.m. and we are here adjourned.